Good morning.
Good morning.
A couple of Saturdays ago, Vicki talked about the song of Zazen, Hakuin's song of Zazen, and you all read it out loud and had a discussion. Thank you very much. Very nice. And you had a discussion, and it was about taking refuge, so I thought that I would talk some about that. And I went through and made notes about the various comments that people made, so I wanted to respond to them. So I don't think I'm going to say who made the comments, but they were all really wonderful, and I thought it might be helpful to talk about that a little bit. So the question is, what does it mean to take refuge? What is refuge? I looked it up in the dictionary, the English word refuge, and it means shelter, protection, aid, relief, escape, safety, retreat, sanctuary, haven, stronghold. So I think we probably pretty much agree with those as words for refuge. And so Dogen wrote, he said, he wrote a fascicle on taking refuge. And he wrote, taking refuge in the three treasures, because that's usually what we do. The three treasures are Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in Buddhism. So we say, taking refuge in the three treasures. You nurture yourself wherever you are. Birth after birth, world after world, you accumulate merit, assemble virtue, and attain unsurpassed complete enlightenment. Even if you are misled by unwholesome friends, obstructed by demons, cut off from your wholesome roots, and become an achantika is a person who's incorrigible, dissipated, hedonistic, there's someone who's lost their moral compass and completely forgotten the teachings. So even if you become an achantika, in the end you will regain your wholesome roots and increase merit. This is from taking refuge in the three treasures. The power of taking refuge in the three treasures will never decay. On Friday morning we take refuge. We say, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha, I take refuge in the Buddha as the perfect teacher, I take refuge in the Dharma as the perfect teachings, and I take refuge in the Sangha as a perfect life. Now I have completely taken refuge in the Buddha, now I have completely taken refuge in the Dharma, now I have completely taken refuge in the Sangha. Now I have completely taken shelter and protection and taken aid from, felt relief from, escaped my suffering by taking these, feel safer, find asylum, find a retreat space, find sanctuary, haven, and stronghold by taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. Dogen says you nurture yourself by taking the three treasures. You accumulate merit. So let's ask, what is merit, you may ask. In Buddhism, merit in Sanskrit is punya, and in Japanese it's fuku. It refers to the activities that are virtuous and wholesome, resulting in a kind of storehouse of future karmic goodness that leads to happiness. Merit is accumulated and can be given away or kept for yourself. Usually, when we do a service, not usually, when we do service, we have an echo, it's called an echo at the end of the service that the Doan does. We say we give away the merit of the recitation of the sutra. So in Mahayana Buddhism, we just give that merit away. But by giving that merit away, we still, I think, fill our storehouse. So this taking refuge, this formal act of taking refuge, in Buddhism is a very efficacious thing. It's a very powerful ritual. It's a ritual to take refuge formally when we do these three times we do this refuge. And then I love this, that it leads to attaining unsurpassed complete enlightenment. Not bad. But you know, it's magic. It's magic, taking refuge. It is this deep kind of absorption. As Vicky brought up, which is this quote which Dogen gives in the Zui Monkey, which is about this idea that in your robes you walk across a field filled with dew. The practice is like this field of dew that we're walking through. And we don't know that we're getting wet. I'm sure we've all had this experience when we're wearing pants, right? I have. You walk through a field and you get to the other side and you're just wet right up to your knees, even though the field itself, the grass didn't seem that deep. So this, something's working, some kind of deep movement is happening through this trust and faith when we take the refuge. Taking refuge is a trust and faith practice. I trust that the Buddha's teachings are perfect. I trust that the Dharma is perfect. I trust that being in Sangha is the perfect life. I have faith. Now I have completely expressed my faith in this, in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So it's a faith and trust practice. Even if you're misled by unwholesome friends, you know, you're obstructed by demons, you're cut off from your wholesome roots, and you become a degenerate. Even if that happens, having taken the precepts is still efficacious. That they are in your heart. They're in this storehouse of compassion and wisdom. Even if you've completely forgot Buddhism, completely, this will still be efficacious in some way. You're not irredeemable. So it's a kind of invisible, active principle that's functioning in your life. I love the fact that about the merit part, about being a storehouse of happiness, that we do these activities and somehow some tiny little bit is this storehouse of happiness. Taking refuge makes us happy. So it's a kind of efficacious accumulation that cannot be diminished. So now I'm going to talk about some of the things that you all said about taking refuge, things that you felt like were about taking refuge. Because when we say we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, that's very broad. So Buddha, of course, is Shakyamuni Buddha. Buddha is the teachings. Buddha is our teachers. Buddha is our Buddha, our internal Buddha, our true self. The teachings, the Dharma. Dharmas can be... Big D Dharma means the teaching, or the law. That's what that means in Pali, I think, or Sanskrit. I guess Dhamma would be Pali. Dharma is Sanskrit. So that's the teachings that we have. But you can also think of it as kind of the law of the universe, right? How things work, how the world is. And then Sangha is our community. So it can be a very big community or it can be a very small community, but we are Sangha. So we take refuge in each other. We take refuge that we come and practice together. We take refuge that we're kind of all on the same page. We're trying to figure this out together. So one person said to take refuge in the Buddhist chants and the texts. So one of the things about coming to Zazen and doing service is that we do the same chants over and over and over again. And one of the reasons we do that is because you'd be amazed. These little lines pop up in your head. It's like something's happening in your life and suddenly this pops up in your head. Something from the Universal Gateway. The Universal Gateway says that Avalokiteshvara can save you from demons and flaming ponds and all sorts of things. And probably while you're reciting it, if you're thinking about it, you're saying, really? Xuanzang was saved in his travels to China by reciting the Heart Sutra. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. No fear. So one person in the Sangha said when they went into surgery, that's what came into their head. They just started reciting the Heart Sutra, taking refuge in the Heart Sutra. So this is a very powerful kind of thing that's going on in our psyche. That anybody here who's been practicing for a long time and going to service, you have that experience. I can remember and still do having that experience of just this line popping into my head. And something about that is really helpful. Another person said, taking refuge in participation and working in the temple. I think this is a kind of refuge in Sangha. It's this wholesome activity that we do with others, and we encourage ourselves through that, those activities that we do together. We encourage ourselves by doing this thing together, by pulling towards the same goal. So when we moved here, and everybody came and helped move, and today when we do work practice together, what I'm hoping we all feel from doing this is that this is our place. That we are doing this together with each other. That this isn't just the teacher's place or something like that, but that everybody participates. I know at San Francisco Zen Center, when I go back, particularly Tassajara, and I can say, oh, that thing right there, that was so-and-so did that. That rock got moved by so-and-so, and I helped turn over this rock in the field here when I was here. This sense of this storehouse of our activity together that never stops being there, that is encouraging, that brings up fond memories. Well, sometimes, maybe not, but mostly. Sorry, I can't help myself. So we feel like we're accomplishing this good thing for the temple, and we take solace and joy in that. One person said that they wondered if when you took refuge, if you were running away from your problems, if taking refuge was a way in which somehow you didn't maybe stay present in a way that would be the kind of right thing to do. So taking refuge is not running away. Taking refuge is this willingness to have a kind of faith and trust that we can stay in this place, that we can follow the teaching, and that will help alleviate the suffering of ourselves and others. And it's that refuge of knowing and having faith in that helps us stay, that helps us stay put. Dogen said, if you take refuge in Buddha, and if you take refuge in Dharma and Sangha, you can always abide in the Four Noble Truths. With this wisdom, you always observe and understand suffering and the arising of suffering. You know how to go beyond suffering forever. If you take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, you can always abide in the Four Noble Truths. So what are the Four Noble Truths? There is suffering. There is a cause of suffering. And there is an end to suffering. It's Eightfold Path. So there is suffering that as human beings in this world, we experience suffering. So what is that about? And so the Four Noble Truths, this was the first teaching of the Buddha that he gave, is that there's a cause. And usually the kind of shorthand for this is that suffering is we don't want something. We do want something and we can't get it. We don't want something and we're getting it. Or what's called the getting trapped and re-becoming, which is this wanting to solidify and define ourselves to ourselves in a way that we're very attached to. That we can't let go of when it's not helpful. And then there is the third one, which is that there's the path, and then the Four Noble Truths are this kind of specific path. I mean, the Eightfold Path, which is right meditation, right speech, that kind of thing. So when we first encounter these teachings, we often, if we're in a difficult situation, we want to resist the teachings. You know, it's a real affront to ourselves when we're getting something that we don't want. It's like you just want to go, like, would you get out of here? Whatever that is, I'm going to push you away. I don't want to be with this thing. I don't want to be with this person. I don't want this thing. I don't want my life to be this way. And so we start to suffer. And we don't really want to go into it. We don't want to presence ourselves for it. What we want to do is get out of Dodge. So to take refuge in the teaching is to have faith that I can stay here. To have faith that I am Buddha. That I am Buddha nature. To have faith that I can presence myself because I have faith in the teaching. I have faith in those ancestors and the people who've practiced, who've come before me, who figured out how this works and had it work for them. And I have faith in the Sangha. So this way that having faith in taking refuge in the three treasures is also taking refuge in the Four Noble Truths. That's workable, it's doable. That I can stay here and face my life. So I think that's here what Dogen's saying. If you take refuge in Buddha, if you take refuge in Dharma and Sangha, you can always abide in the Four Noble Truths. You can always stand in the midst of your suffering and work with that, and find equanimity in the midst of that. But you have to have faith in the teaching, because if you don't have faith in that, then you're going to want to run away from it because it just doesn't seem very workable. So this taking refuge and how we understand this is, of course, going to vary depending on the nature of our suffering and the nature of the situation that we're in. But we have to have some kind of faith that it is efficacious. And this comes from taking refuge. Even though you may not be calling it that, it comes from taking refuge. Francis Cook, and I can't remember what book he says this in, he talks about Buddhist faith. He says, what we're asked to be doing with our faith in Buddhism is to go far enough that we can see whether or not it's true. So if we're being asked to practice no self or no inherently existing self, if we're being told that our happiness will come from practicing that. When I first started practicing in difficult situations, I would like be really resistant to that. But I had a belief that the teaching was true, so I was willing to stick with it. And so eventually what happened was that there was a transformation and I was happier. But first I had to go through my resistances to doing the practice of letting go of my ideas about the situation. Because there's this part of us that's like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Don't ask me to do that. I don't want to be nice. Why should I be nice to this person? Like, they don't deserve it. For me to be nice to them. That's an example, right, of the kind of stuff that we do. And so the Four Noble Truths say that's a source of suffering. And we're saying, I'm not suffering. That doesn't make me suffer. I'm getting it back. And that's not suffering. That's just getting it back. That's going to make me happier. But actually, it doesn't. So, but we have to get past that phase. We have to let go of that. And how in the world do we do that? I think we do it because we have to have faith in the teaching. We have to have faith that there's something else going on that we can move towards. Difficult and move towards that. So this is part of this taking refuge. Then somebody else said, refuge in choosing to be happy. So that's kind of part and parcel of the same thing that I'm talking about. Refuge choosing to be happy. So this seems to me this could be a little tricky. And the reason it could be tricky is because we don't want to get into this thing where we're telling ourselves we should be another way, and then beating ourselves up because we're not that way. So something's happening and we're unhappy. And we say, well, I choose to be happy. I should choose to be happier. And sometimes it just doesn't work that way. So that we bring this compassion into the situation. We bring compassion for ourselves and compassion for the other person into the situation. That's taking refuge. Having this refuge that compassion is possible. Refuge that the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, was compassionate. That our essential Buddha nature is compassion. Compassion. So we say the doctrine of emptiness, empty of inherent existence. So we call that technically wisdom. But if things are empty of inherent existence, what does that mean? That means that everything is the same on a certain level. That we are all part of a process called the world, the earth, humanity, all being, manifesting. And when we understand that, compassion arises. So compassion's not, as Trungpa Rinpoche says, idiot compassion, where you just kind of don't use boundaries, don't use your brain, don't discern anything. This is a kind of compassion where you're asked to be intelligent in the midst of it, to make discerning observations, but at the same time to be inclusive. Oh, this compassion includes the whole situation here. It includes the other person. It's not just about me getting my way. So that's the doctrine of emptiness. That's the doctrine of no self. And that's how compassion arises out of that, because we're all in this together. All being is in this together. But of course, how to discern that each individual situation can be difficult. But we have faith that it's possible. We have faith that it's doable. So I think also what this person was saying is that we can make choices about whether we're going to suffer or whether we're going to be happy. So if I've decided I'm going to be mad at somebody and I'm only going to look at everything from my point of view, in a certain level, I'm choosing to suffer. I know the practice. I know the practice. I'm mad at my neighbor. I'm ready to, you know, twist their head off, and I know the practice, and I say to myself, you know, this is not helpful, and yet I persist in I just want to ignore the practice. I'm a chantika in that moment. You know, I just want to ignore the practice. So I think what this person was saying is that we can choose to use the discipline, I suppose, to turn our mind back towards a more wholesome point of view. That we can, in each moment, do our best to come back to this wholesome point of view. Not in a way that's harsh with ourselves, but in a way that is paying attention, that isn't just completely lenient. You know, we do have to make effort sometimes to do the practice. So I think that's part of what they were saying. Someone else said, refuge in music, singing and dancing. I like that. Singing and dancing, you know. Isn't that fun? Like, you know, singing and dancing and music, and it just, something about that, just your whole body, you know. It's, you have to let your mind go. So what is that? You know, it's kind of magic. Somehow we are completely tuned in on a cellular level for music and dancing and singing. It resonates in our body somehow. We just want to tap our toes and get up and, you know, spin around and laugh. You know, when you're sometimes you put on music in the house and you're feeling kind of glum or whatever, and you put on music that you like, and all of a sudden it's like your mood. It's amazing. Your mood just completely changes. It's okay. Taking refuge like that is okay. It's great to take a break. It's great to make our bodies happy, to make our minds happy. Because then we can come back to whatever it is with a kind of fresh view, with a way of lightening, perhaps, what's happening. Or even if it's not about that, but just, you know, let's do that. Let's do that and let's go out into nature. Someone else mentioned nature as well. It's always great to go out and take a walk. Yesterday I walked down to Capitola Village during the storm, and there was something about my hair is blowing and I'm getting sand in my ears. Found that out later. I'm like, what is this, you know? There's something so enlivening about being in this world as just an animal in this world, where feeling the rain and feeling the wind and feeling the sun, or looking up at a tree, reminding ourselves how small we are in a way, and yet simultaneously we are part of this enormous event called the universe. So that it's something about that, reminding ourselves, often puts our problems in a certain perspective. And that's taking refuge. That's part of taking refuge. This taking mental shelter, if you will. But I think this is kind of like a way in which we take refuge with our bodies and our minds from, or with, maybe taking refuge with the totality. Thinking about music to me is interesting, because music is a kind of mathematical thing, right? To me, I think of music as, they talked about the music of the spheres. And Gurdjieff used to talk about the thing called octaves. So you would like be going through the octaves and you'd hit a half note and veer off somewhere. It's a spiritual practice. So there's this way that music, on an intellectual level, has something so much bigger and broader than our normal understanding. So it opens up our consciousness to do this. Then someone else said, taking refuge in your effort, the effort that you put into practice. Taking refuge in just coming back, just being present, just saying, yes, I will. Yes, I will. No, I won't. Yes, I will. Just coming back to that, making effort. There's a Japanese phrase, falls down 7 times, gets up 8. We're like the Daruma dolls. The Daruma dolls have rounded edges on. You can't knock a Daruma doll over. Anybody have those little punching things when you're a little kid? I forgot what they're called. The name of that little guy, but it's like it's weighted in the bottom, you know, Bozo? I think so. You're like, you know, you hit Bozo, Bozo, boing, comes back. So there's something very uplifting to me about this idea that we, you know, keep coming back, we keep making our effort, that we take refuge in that, that we have faith in ourselves, we have faith that we can do this, and we keep coming back. I was recently there's a book that just came out called The Power of Meaning, and it said that it talks about, they've been doing these studies, and having meaning in your life is, they said, more important than the idea of being happy in your life. That actually having some sense of meaning is going to actually make you happier than some abstract idea of happiness. And I think that's true. We all want to feel like what we're doing in our lives is helpful. And I think what Buddhism says to us about this is that when we live a wholesome life that's inclusive, intelligent, and compassionate towards all beings, towards the totality of our experience, that's meaningful. That in and of itself is meaningful. We don't have to make up some kind of grandiose story, which I think is easy to get caught up with in our culture. But that just being this wholesome person who's making effort, is efficacious, is meaningful, and does impact other people's lives. It's meaningful to go to the grocery store and have an interaction with a stranger that's a positive interaction. again, it's a kind of magic. We say playing it forward, right? Playing it forward is like this. It's this kind of magic of effort that we make. So I would say that it's really helpful to look at our lives and say, what's meaningful? And to take refuge in that. Dogen writes that the practice that we do, the effort that we make in practice, is the effort of a Buddha. That when we engage in practice, we are engaging in realized action. We have notions about what that might be, but just that we are doing it, that we are making our sincere effort, is the effort of a Buddha. And that takes faith and trust sometimes to do that. If we know that our effort, that what compels us to make this effort is our Buddha nature. What compels us to do this is our true nature. What compels us to do this is this wholesome aspect that we, our Buddha that wants to practice, that wants to come and do this, that wants to do something meaningful, that wants to do something that's efficacious, that wants to take refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha or any other kind of wholesome activity. That's our Buddha side. That's the side that's practice realization. So this is our effort to take refuge in that, to have faith in that, to acknowledge that in ourselves. Someone else said that taking refuge while they're washing clothes or doing some other kind of what we usually call like a mundane activity. The person who mentioned this said, I feel so grounded. I'm not quoting them directly, but this is what I have heard. I feel so grounded and in connection with the whole world doing these activities that I know that when I'm washing my clothes, that all these other people in the world are doing this throughout time and space. They've been doing this. So that's our shared humanity, which has nothing to do with our politics. It has nothing to do with any of those kinds of things. It's this thing that we do as human beings that joins and unites us. It's a kind of lineage. It's a kind of lineage that we share with each other. And this is the same person who said that they get in touch with other people in other parts of the world as a way to remind themselves, to feel this connection, which makes them very happy. So this way that we connect with other people in a way that's not about our differences, but actually looking for our sameness, looking for the things that bind us together. Because when we find the things that bind us together, then we feel empathy and compassion for each other. And out of that empathy and compassion, we'll find the wisdom to be able to dialogue and talk to each other, even when we don't agree with each other. I think also it's a kind of refuge because it's not about conflict. It's taking refuge and regenerating ourselves through this shared activity. Dogen calls this miraculous powers. He says that, we all know the phrase that chopping wood, carry water. That is an expression of miraculous powers. Nice. So that's where, from Dogen's point of view, that's where the deepest practice is coming from. That's the expression as a Buddha. How do we carry water? How do we chop wood? How do we go grocery shopping? How do we drive our car? How do we do this effort? What is our practice realization? What is this amazing, unbelievable, miraculous power of our everyday lives? To take refuge in that, to find solace in that, to find happiness in that, to find meaning in that, is really important. So I don't think I have time to go through all of this, But another one that someone pointed out was, and I'll just distill this, taking refuge in impermanence. So we talk a lot about impermanence in Buddhism. Things are always changing, right? Things are always changing. Sometimes we like them, the change. Sometimes we don't like the change. You know, when we don't like the change, we forget about the fact that without impermanence, nothing could exist. I couldn't move my arm without all the chemical reactions that are going on in my body. I couldn't move my arm. I couldn't be talking. You know, if I weren't, all my synapses weren't firing. Hopefully, it's making sense. If they weren't busy in there, being impermanent, well, I'd be having a problem here. Impermanence, we could not have birth without impermanence. We could not have death without impermanence. We could not have change without impermanence. We couldn't drive our car. We couldn't be happy without impermanence, because what goes along with that is the other side of that, you know, being unhappy. So that things are constantly changing or in flux. That means that when we're unhappy, that we will probably be happy at some point in the future. When I'm unhappy, I really say to myself, you know something? This is going to change. It's like inevitable that my state of mind will change. And when we sit zazen, we know that, right? We sit zazen, and maybe we don't think about this, but you're busy doing something in your head. Can you imagine if somebody said to you, would you now tell me everything that went through your head in that 40 minutes? You probably couldn't do it, you know. So this way in which we absolutely depend upon impermanence. Impermanence is the thing that makes life life in many ways. So this change, this cycle benefits all being. Think about it. If no one ever died, that would be very strange. Or no thing ever died. Flowers never died. Everything stayed exactly the same. We'd be like a museum of statues or something. I don't know. But this is absolutely essential for our life, that there's change. And this life is what makes our life. This interconnected event of all beings makes our life what it is. To take refuge in that, to have some kind of faith in that, I think is really important, instead of just completely taking it for granted. And I think a lot of the things we're talking about, these activities, boil down to that process, that kind of mental way that we find, this mental and physical way that we find to reconnect with the totality of our existence. And then it was said, it's a mystery. Life is a mystery. Things are mysterious, and that we're okay with that, that we take refuge in this mystery. We just so much want to, like, make it so. You know, like Star Trek? Okay, Scotty, make it so. No, whatever it is. But it often doesn't work that way. We'd like to be able to control things, but there's this kind of, to let go and just for a moment say, this life, just as it is, it's all right. Just as it is, right now in the midst of my suffering, it's okay. That's taking refuge in the totality of our existence, a kind of faith that we and all beings are Buddha nature. You could say it that way. You might say it another way. This faith in grounding ourselves in this, just this, you know, or maybe just like that, you know. And it's okay. It's okay. And then the next moment, it's not. But maybe we're rejuvenated in a little bit there, or we can come back, keep coming back to this, keep coming back to our life. The whole world supports us. The whole world working together allows us to breathe. The whole world working together provides us with food. The whole world sustains us. And then finally, the last one was taking refuge in the Zazen. Well, that was kind of cool. Taking refuge in Zazen. The willingness to just sit down and be present for our life. That's what Zazen is. This willingness to sit down and be present, to allow the totality of this to come in to our psyches and our bodies. Zazen is magic. We have ideas about what meditation is, inevitably. I think I told you the story. When I first came to practice, when I went to Tassajara, there's something called Tongariya where you sit for a week before you enter the monastery. I was going to sit 24 hours a day for a week. One of my teachers said to me, you know, why don't you just go follow the schedule? Well, it was hard. Just following the schedule was really hard. You have to surrender yourself to that process. In a way, sitting Zazen is surrendering yourself, taking refuge in this activity, this mind, this being, this totality, just sitting down and letting go. This deep practice of just being present and letting go, that it's all right, that you have faith, that we are Buddhists. We have faith in the Dharma. We have faith in the activities that we engage in that's based on trust and hope and letting go. And faith in the Sangha, faith in all of us, that we can do this together, that we can make our efforts over and over and over again, that we are Buddhas being Buddhas who do not even know that we are Buddhas. Thank you very much.